90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio. Streaming online at www.kkfi.org.
The views and opinions of this program are those of its host and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Midcoast Radio Project, or its staff and volunteers.
Sad story that still waiting for the truth to be told now. Whoa, whoa, whoa. It won't be long now, now. Won't be long. Heard the news, heard your rivers old and dry. And on TV, I see missiles in your sky. Word is out, loud whispering, going on. Boy, angels turn mercenaries, coming in thousands. Oh, oh, oh.
You're tuned to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. This is Urban Connections. I'm your host, Donna Wolf, our co-host. Joe Jackson is on at the table, and we have a guest joining us today via telephone hookup, Mr. Richard Scroggins. Richard, are you there? Richard, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I'm here.
All righty. Thanks for being on board with us here today on Urban Connections as we continue our series on
How to Buy a Home. This is session number 3, and it's called The Home Inspection. And our guest today is Mr. Richard Scroggins, who is the owner of Precise Property Inspections. He's a certified member of the American Society of Home Inspectors, in good standing. He completed training at the Midwest Inspectors Institute. He's a member of the National Association of Certified Home Inspectors, or NASHI. He's worked as a certified home inspector for over 17 years. He's a member of the Better Business Bureau, and he specializes in hands-on inspections with his potential homeowners. His motto is, he said, he tries to educate homeowners as he inspects. He has done over 5,000 inspections in both commercial and residential properties. Thank you, Mr. Scroggins, for being our guest today on Urban Connections, session number 3 of How to Buy a Home.
I appreciate it. Thank you. I appreciate the chance to educate some folks on the way.
So as you begin, how important is a home inspection when you're buying a home, Mr. Scroggins?
Well, it's very important. I mean, over the years, I've heard it probably a million times, you know. Home is probably one of the biggest investments you'll ever make, and it really is. It's true. And we've also heard a lot of stories about, oh, I wish I'd never done this, or if I had known this. And really, since you only get one shot at it, it's just smart to go in and make sure that when you decide to write your name on that dotted line and take over that property, you make sure that it's something that you wanted and that you can handle. Home ownership's a great thing, but it is a little bit of work. So it's something that you don't want to have to go into and spend the rest of your life doing. So you'd call for an inspection to make sure that you're not making the wrong move or decision.
I asked the realtor that we had on board with us last week, Tony. I asked Tony, how do you find a good home inspector? What should a person do when they're looking for someone to inspect their home?
Well, that's an excellent question. I mean, you know, for a little while there, we had problems with just making sure you had a good home. Prior to the 70s, folks were just depending on Uncle Bob or a friend who used to put roofs on to tell them whether or not the home was great. But you really need to go after finding an inspector. And in my opinion, and it's only, you know, because it's been established and been around for the longest, I would suggest a person first check out the ASHI website. That's American Society of Home Inspectors. And then dial in their zip code or where they're planning on purchasing a home and see if they can find an inspector in that area. I stress the ASHI because in order to become an ASHI inspector, we have to have passed several tests. And then we must continue education because things change. Another great thing about becoming an ASHI inspector, I found it took a little bit more work, but not only did we have to know what was wrong, we have to know why it's wrong. So what it does is, it's in theory, basically what you're doing is giving your home a physical, and you want to make sure that you've got someone who knows all the ins and outs and what they're all about. I would strongly suggest going to an ASHI site and looking for an ASHI inspector. And once you find that, it would be a great idea to ask them a simple question like, what's your member number? There are some folks out there who claim to be or have what we call logo privileges, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're qualified or certified to perform a good home inspection for you. True ASHI inspectors have a standard of practice that they have to follow for each and every home, whether it's 15,000 or 15 million. So in doing that, we guarantee that if nothing else, you'll have every item touched and at least a comment about the condition of it. And that's really all we're there for. We're not there to pass or fail, but just to give you an idea of what you're about to invest in.
Is there a standard list of items that are inspected in each home inspection, or does that vary per house, per region?
Well, there is a standard. In order to, always use the example, and, it's kind of off the wall, but, when you're purchasing a home, you're purchasing a structure, and that's a fancy word for box. So there's three items that definitely need to check out in order for you to call it a box. It better have a top, a bottom, and sides. And when you're dealing with a property, it should have a good roof, good exterior walls, and a foundation. That's a start. I use that example because, for instance, a hole in the wall may cost $5 to fix, but it's $5,000 to fix a hole in the foundation. But yes, ma'am, to answer your question, there's definite standards of practice that we must follow and we must know in order to pass one of the tests that we have. And it's a set guideline for how we should inspect, what we should inspect, what we can and cannot comment on. Now, we do need to keep in mind, however, that inspectors typically, unless you call for a specialized service, visual examiners. We're out there taking a look at the same things you're looking at with a little bit of a better eye for what it means. But yes, ma'am, there is definitely a standard of practice that must be followed each and every time.
What is, here in the Midwest, out of all the homes and properties you've inspected, what is the one thing that homeowners need to look for the most to make sure that that is correct and it is a good, solid, is good,
well,
solid, ready to go?
That kind of goes back to what I said earlier. We can cut out all these extra different components and things like that. If you're looking to purchase a home, the first thing you might want to consider is that box solid? Do you have a decent roof on it? So you check your disclosure to check the age of the roof, when it was replaced last, have there ever been any signs of leaks, things of that nature. The exterior walls, what are they made of? How are they installed? Were there gaps and dents and things? Were there been moisture intrusion? And then finally, the foundation. Now, water is you're going to find is your biggest enemy inside and out of a home, whether it be leaks and drips or just improper grading around the home. Another thing a person might want to consider is as soon as they find a home or an address that they're really interested in, before you even pull up to that address, look at the homes in the neighborhood. What are the conditions of the roofs? Have there been hail damage? Are there roofing trucks all over the place? That'll let you know something's going on. If your house is at the bottom of the hill, when it rains, where is water going?
To the bottom of the hill?
Yes.
Exactly, right into the home. And you got to consider, typically, your home is a concrete box sitting in soil. If we start eroding that soil, that house is going to move. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean run from the home, but more importantly, let's check a little closer. What have we done to keep water out of that basement or out of that crawl space or out of that foundation?
Which brings me to the question, what can one do to keep water out of that basement and keep that foundation of their home sound?
Well, there's several applications. If, in fact, you do find a home that you really love and it just happens to be sitting, lower than the grade outside, then typically we would ask that you correct the grading. Many of the folks who get inspections will get comments in the report like, there may be negative grade in the north side or on the exterior over here in this area. And it's basically saying that right now, although the yard doesn't, but against this home where the foundation is, the soil is sloping downhill toward the home. And if it rains, it's going to have no choice but to run into that foundation. So typically we'd add field dirt. Now, in some applications, you want to be careful about doing that because you got to remember when soil gets wet, it expands. And if, in fact, you add more, in some cases you add more soil and it expands and causes movement. When those are the cases, then a lot of times we'll add what we call subsurface drains. That's a fancy word for an underground drain pipe that when it rains, water collects into it and runs away from your home. I use a funny comment out in the field all the time, you know, extend your gutters and downspouts away from the home, or make sure that the water is running away from your foundation. If you have to, run it to the neighbor's yard. But keep the water away from your foundation, and that'll save your home.
So we've got, if you have a small water leak, is something that people really need to look at and have it investigated, because it can become a big water leak, is what you're saying.
Well, the way we look at everything, has it been damaged? Is it working the way the manufacturer designed it to? Is it installed properly? And already two of those three are bad when I decide to do my checklist on it. First of all, it wasn't designed to leak. And then second of all, it's not working the way the manufacturer designed it to. So in theory, eventually it will become a problem, whether it's a gutter that's causing water to pond along the foundation outside, flashing that's allowing water to penetrate an exterior wall cover, or a water line inside the home that's beginning to deteriorate the ceiling and cause mold issues. So it's always important to address them.
What do you say to the potential homeowner who says, well, the FHA is going to do an inspection, I'll just depend on that?
Well, the only issue I have with that is that 90% of the time, the things that they're looking at are only the shell or the cover of what we're dealing with. In many cases, they may crack open the electrical panel, you know, door and say, oh, yeah, it's 100 amp, and that's what they're concerned with. Well, we'll do that, and then we'll take those screws around the corner or off of that panel cover and then look inside that panel to make sure that it's wired properly. A lot of times it looks good, but when you open it up, you find that there's several wires running at one particular breaker, which is an improper wiring practice. It works, but it's an improper wiring practice. There's also fusing issues that we deal with. Each and every breaker in that panel has a different size wire that runs into it. And if, in fact, we have a breaker that's saying it's going to give it 20 amps and a wire that's saying it's only going to carry 15, there's a fire about to happen. That being said, I see that quite often with a lot of the older homes where newer AC units have been installed. When those exterior condensers were built back in the day, they took a whole lot more electricity than they do nowadays because they're energy efficient. So once we replace that, most of our heating and ventilation guys, what we call HVAC techs, aren't quite electricians. So what they do is they'll install the unit, and the newer unit only takes 25 amps, and the older unit took 40, so the first thing I'll catch in that panel is way too much current going to that unit. Now, you're depending on your warranty and all of that to cover it, and it won't because there's existing issues. So that's why you call us out. We take it a little further. You may find the perfect home, and then as you walk around the side, you see this little opening 2 foot by 2 foot right there in the side of the foundation. You may have a crawl space. You'd like to know what's going on in there. We'll go in there for you.
Well, we're going to have to take a station break, so we ask you to stay tuned with us with Richard Scroggins, who is owner of Precise Home Inspections, in our third series of How to Buy a Home. You're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City's Community Radio Station. We're back with our third installment of How to Buy a Home and our certified home inspector, Mr. Richard Scroggins.
Here at 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio on the Urban Connection Show. Joe?
Yes. So, Mr. Scroggins, what, as we were saying, people depending upon the inspection is going to be done by the FHA when you buy the house, how different is that than what you're going to do? As you were saying, yours is very in-depth. I know I've purchased a home, and the FHA guy's come out there, and he's been there maybe 10 or 15 minutes, where I've had home inspections, and they'll be there 90 minutes to 2 hours.
Exactly. I mean, you know, like I said, our criteria is a little bit deeper than the, it takes almost 10 minutes just to go over the contract and make sure everyone knows what's going on. Like I said, ours is hands-on in many cases, but if nothing else, there's at least 470 different items that I need to actually inspect and check if they're functioning properly. We try to leave no stone unturned. Even within our standards, it states that these are things that we must inspect. We need to note things like the location of the main water valve, the location of the electrical panel, what type of insulation is in the attic, if any, the type of framing that's in the home. Whereas I think in their case, they're just making sure that there's not much peeling pain, cracked glasses, and missing handrails, things of that nature. And I think that's important, too. But I don't think they take it as far as we do because they're not really asked to do that. That's the reason you hire a home inspector. You're calling someone who you trust to go in and look over the entire property and who can answer questions for you that you may have. Some of the questions you may have may be outside of the standards that we're there for, but because we're there, we should be able to answer those for you or at least get the answers. You're hiring someone to tell you everything there is to know about the home so that you can make the best decision possible. So you'd like someone who you can talk to and ask questions that may be outside of the box, and that's why you would want to hire your own inspector. And also, it would be someone you trust. In many cases, you'll get only enough information to make it work, and that's not what we're there for. We're there to tell you everything there is to know.
So I got two questions for you. One occurred to me as you were speaking, and that is, can you talk about a contract that you would have with the home inspector? What kind of elements does that contract contain? I think this would be another thing for potential consumers or somebody trying to buy a home should be familiar with. What's inside that contract they sign with the home inspector?
Well, I think the bulk of it is you got to remember that all of our inspections are visual examinations. Therefore, we can't do any destructive testing. So if you were to find that you purchased the home based on the information an inspector gave you, and then one day you cut the wall open and found $1 million, we couldn't have reported that because we're not able to do any destructive testing as far as cutting holes in walls, pulling up carpet, and things of that nature. Our contract would probably be mostly about the fact that we want you to understand that everything is visual, and that in some cases there's limitations on liability or other options where you can pay for options. For instance, in my report, I have a contract that's going to give you an option to also do a radon inspection. We used to offer termite inspection. Now we give it to you free every time we perform an inspection. But it will just kind of more or less put you at ease as to what your inspector is there to do for you and what your expectations should be. And that's really what the bulk of it is. And then from there, each inspector has its own contract where he may ask if you want to purchase a warranty or things of that nature.
Okay. So my other question is, what's a deal breaker for somebody who has a home inspected? They're interested in purchasing a home. They get an inspection done. What is a deal breaker? Something that could be exposed in an inspection done by yourself or other professionals like yourself that would make that homeowner, that potential home buyer say, nope, can't buy this one because?
Well, you know, that's the dilemma that we have. Like I said, we have to perform each and every inspection the same no matter what. We have a standard of practice based on national requirements for homes that we work off of. Now, in some cases, I've done inspections where I'll come back and tell them, listen, I don't know. You're dealing with the structure here, and the foundation on the north side is gone. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we're going to tear that section out anyway and add to the home. Well, in that case, it's fine for them. It, you know, we can't choose someone else's what would make their decision for them. We can only give them the information so they can make their own decision. Now, should there be questions about something that we're noting, we're there to answer those questions. They may have questions like, well, how dramatic is this? Or what would it entail to repair? Mm-hmm. Or is this a good, you know, but as far as a deal breaker could be anything from the microwave, the wrong color, to I thought you were going to leave the pictures on the wall. I mean, it's up to the potential buyer to determine what is most important to them.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you look at the basics, you start with that box I told you about. If, mm-hmm. in fact, you're dealing with a box that doesn't have a good top, bottom, or sides. If those can't be negotiated, then you're purchasing less than what you thought you were getting.
Okay. Joe?
So when you finish inspecting, can you tell us about the report that you give the homeowners and what is in that report and how they can use that report for their benefit if there was something that you found that may need to be fixed or the service life of a product may have say a furnace or something may have a problem, may have something you may have noticed. How have homeowners, potential homeowners, used that report that you've given them that you've worked with?
Well, the great thing about my report is it's computer generated. Therefore, everything I say, including hi, my name is Richard, will be documented in the booklet. In my case, it's actually emailed to my client. There's at least 147 pictures, arrows pointing at defects, circles, explanations. And more importantly, before they get that report, they've already walked around the house with me for 2 hours looking at each and everything that I've noted in the report. So they've got a good idea of what it means, and they're usually waiting on my report just to confirm it. The great thing about it is, should there be questions later on from another party, that report can be forwarded to them, or the issues can be noted and they can address them that way. It's a really user-friendly report. Once you receive it, like I said, it's detailed enough to where you could almost just look at the pictures and see what's going on. But like I said, the great thing about my report is it comes out, and it's really just a confirmation of what you and I talked about on the inspection. And I really encourage you to follow me around and ask questions. And typically that works great until I say it's time for the attic, and then folks kind of disappear or the crawl space, but still, that's fine. I invite you to follow me around and ask questions. You know, what does this mean? They stayed here that it's never had water, but we've got a watermark 5 foot high on the wall. I'm there to answer those questions. But once again, the report itself, once it's emailed to you, everything we talked about, everything we saw, different angles of each room are all noted there, and you have pictures and digital pictures that come with all of it.
Richard, can you kind of give us an idea of what some of the worst things you've seen in attics and crawl spaces in your career?
I do remember an inspection that I performed. It was during the winter months, and there was snow everywhere. And, you know, I remember looking over the roof and checking some things out. And then I got inside the home, and I found that in the living room there was a nice fireplace just going. I mean, just roaring, beautiful fire.
Mm-hmm.
After going through a few rooms, I realized that I do not remember seeing chimney anywhere outside.
Oh, my.
So when we got into the attic, sure enough, the chimney was terminating and discharging smoke into the attic. And actually, you could see where the decking of the roof was being scorched and burned.
Wow. That's a serious situation, isn't it?
It's serious. There have been times where, you know, I've peeked up the chimney flue to see exactly what the condition of it was and found little eyeballs looking down at me.
Oh, my.
And then I've crawled in crawl spaces and come out and later on that evening put the report together and noticed in some of the pictures there were little eyes over in the corner looking at me the whole time. So I've seen a little bit of all of it. I've had birds attack me in an attic. I've had bats fly all over me coming off a ladder coming out of an attic. We get to see a little bit of everything.
Some serious occupational hazards. Sounds like. Well, I'd like to give our listeners an opportunity to give us a call if they've got questions for Richard Scroggins, who is a certified home inspector. The number here to call is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI, the third in Urban Connections series on how to buy a home.
Mr. Scroggins, what do you say to the potential homeowner who says, well, I'm going to have my contractor look at the house, or I've got a buddy friend of mine who works on the homes who's going to look at it for me?
I think that's nice, as long as they're certified inspectors. If they're not, then you just, what would you do? Because I use the example that typically what we're doing when we're out there, we're actually giving the home a physical. So, I use this example quite a few times with a lot of the agents. I mean, would you call a plumber to fix a roof? It's not a smart move. And unless they're certified and know exactly what they're looking at, a lot of times there are some bigger issues that are going on. I just the other day had a furnace that was installed, and it looked great. Unfortunately, because it was a newer energy-efficient furnace and the way they tied it to the old water heater, which was not, it created some venting issues which couldn't be seen, tasted, or smelled, but should folks move in that home, it wouldn't be long before someone could end up injured or worse.
Wow. We've got a caller. Caller, can you state your name and where you're calling from and what's your question?
Hi. My name is Rich, and I'm calling from Overland Park.
Yes.
I manage a house in Hyde Park. It was built 105 years ago or more, 110 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit cold, and it has new furnaces. Would it gain much to wrap insulation around the air transfer ducts in the basement, the metal ducts?
It wouldn't hurt. I think that's really the best thing to do if, in fact, you're dealing with cool air for your air conditioning. If it's an older home, then obviously it wasn't as airtight as the homes nowadays are. And more than likely, there was either a gravity furnace or an oil-fired furnace there at one time. The biggest thing to consider when you're dealing with the older homes like that, I think, and you start retrofitting into newer, upgraded energy-efficient units, is the ducts. Number one, heating and cooling takes different sized ducts. So the HVAC or the heating and ventilation guy really has to figure out a happy medium just to move the air. And then from there, in many cases, if it was, depending on where the ducts were located, once you become or you start introducing a forced air furnace, those ducts really need to be rerouted. And if that's already been done, then it's just a matter of checking CFMs, I would suggest. And then you also have to consider, unless you've completely insulated the home and made it airtight, there's probably air leaks. Do you still have the older energy or the older windows?
We have storm windows in the building.
Yes. Yeah, that has a lot to do with it also. I mean, it would be a matter of where you really want to insulate the home a little better because they just weren't made to be as airtight as they are nowadays.
I don't
nowadays.
Even know if you can insulate it,
Okay, so I would definitely check on the ductwork. Were you using existing ductwork?
Well, it had it had radiators. It had steam radiators. They were taken out about 20-odd years ago, 25 years ago, and ducts were put in, and then... About 2 years ago, we put in these forced draft efficient furnaces, 95%, where the exhaust goes out with a fan pushing it out the sideways.
Right, right. Well, I would think that if, in fact, you've got a new unit installed as well as ductwork, then it might be a situation where you might want to get an HVAC or a heating and ventilation guy out to do what they call a blower door test. And basically, they'll vacuum air through the home just to see where the air leaks are. And, you know, a lot of times that makes a big difference. My home was built in the 50s, and I did that, and I was surprised at some of the leaks and where they were, you know, around penetrations through the ceiling where the chimney went through or the fireplace went through and those areas like that. And then also, if it's been insulated, then more than likely that would be the way to go because that would be the next step to see about insulation.
Would wrap the ducts in the basement with insulation, you mean?
Well,
it's got a basement.
Is the basement finished?
Pardon me, sir?
Well, you guys...
Is the basement finished?
We're going to have to...
You can get at the ducts.
We're going to have to leave it at that, Richard, because we've got other calls coming in and folks holding on, so we want to get as many questions in as possible. Thank you for your call.
To answer your question,
just,
though, I would say yes, I would probably go after wrapping those ducts, but you have to be careful with the moisture.
Okay. And we've got another caller here waiting. See if we got to make sure we can hold on to him.
I'm not sure if they.
So, while we're waiting, I asked you this question: What range does a home appraisal run through, as far as costs? I know is there, since you all are certified. Well, hold on, caller, are you there?
Caller, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, can you hang on just 1 second, and then we'll get to your question. Please hold on.
Sure.
Thanks.
Sure.
Turn your radio down in the background in the meantime.
So what is the cost for a certified home inspection? Because some people may think it's more expensive than what they can afford.
They range anywhere from about $300, that being your average inspection, anywhere from that to $700. And they can get pricey. It all depends on who you call, and what they want to charge. But it also depends on the type of inspection you're going to get. I mean, for instance, some folks offer a radon inspection, some offer a termite, some only come out and give you a piece of paper. The prices, like I said, because they range, it's why you really want to shop around. But really, even with the highest prices, I would say that it's still well worth it if you can get a good inspection, because I'd rather spend $600 or $700 to save myself $60,000. And in many cases on that first inspection, you'll learn a lot also. So if it doesn't work out, you'll kind of have an idea of what to look for the next time.
Okay. Caller, are you still there?
Yes, I'm still here.
What's your question or your comment for Richard, and what's your name? What part of town are you calling from?
My name's Tamara, and I'm calling from Raytown.
Okay, go ahead.
Richard did my inspection when I bought a house in 2001, and I've been looking for him for the last few years. Because I plan on moving again. And he's the guy that wanted to know everything that he checked. And he's very thorough. He's worth the money. My thing is, if you're not going to spend the money, don't buy the house, because you need to have a guy like him to do the inspection.
All righty. We were going to ask Richard to give some contact information at the end of the program, so please stay tuned. Did you have another question other than that?
No, that was it.
Okay,
was
great. Thanks for calling in. The number to call is 816-931-5534, 816-931-KKFI. You just never know who you're going to hear on the radio at KKFI.
No, and it's always good for somebody to call and say that you've done great work and that they've been looking for you. So that's definitely the best testament that one can ever get.
Absolutely.
I appreciate it, too.
Absolutely. So for someone who's just, maybe it's sounding like if someone is, thinking about selling their home, perhaps they should get an inspection. Do people do that in order to get an idea of what type of value they should? Well, I guess that's an assessor.
That's an appraiser.
An appraiser. But still.
Well, we won't deal with the value, but there's a lot of times that I've performed inspections and the seller has called me, you know, with complaints about the defects that we found.
Oh.
And then once I explain to them what we found, then a lot of times they may have relatives that call and say, listen, you just inspected my brother or cousin or whoever was home, and we're about to put ours on the market. And before this inspector comes out here and surprises us like you did my brother or cousin, could you come out and just take a look at it and let us know what you see that needs to be addressed? That way we can address it, or if nothing else, put it under disclosure that we're aware of it. I mean, because in a lot of cases we run into things that we write up that at one time they were okay, but nowadays you just can't go that route. For instance, there's a lot of homes built in the 50s that had water heaters in the garage. Now, you don't think about it, but, you know, you really don't want a water heater in the garage. You just filled your new car with gasoline, and gasoline fumes hover at about 12 inches over the floor. Now, your water heater sitting in that garage, you shut the door behind you, and that flame's coming on at 6 inches off the floor. We could have a problem.
I have never seen that before, but I guess that would be a house with an attached garage, and then the water.
In that same home, you may also find that the garage is actually where you drive downhill underneath the home.
Yes.
I see that quite often as well. Well, back in the day, they didn't feel that they needed to finish the ceilings and the walls, and nowadays you can't do that because that's a firewall. It has to protect the garage, and the garage has to be protected from the rest of the home should there be a fire.
Interesting.
Yes.
What is radon? You keep talking about a radon as an element of some home inspections. What is radon?
Radon is a gas they found that comes from the Earth's core. A few years back, I don't know if you guys remember that, Madame Curie, she found radon, and it was determined that it was a radioactive gas, and, you know, if you're involved in it in high levels, there's a great chance you could have respiratory issues and possibly even die of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's everywhere. You know, back in the old days in science class, we'd cut the world in half, and you'd see all these different layers that work their way toward the center of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's where your molten lava and all that good stuff is, but radioactive gas has escaped from that throughout the world into the atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And where there's cracks and fissures and crevices in the soil, those gases escape and they emit into the air a lot greater than everywhere else. However, the average read on the outside is 0.03 picocuries per liter. But if I ran outside with the Miracle Whip jar and turned it upside down in the backyard, then those gases would build up a lot heavier inside that Miracle Whip jar. And here in the United States, the EPA has found that if you get readings or levels higher than 4.0 picocuries per liter, then there's a great chance you could have problems. So your home, in theory, is the Miracle Whip jar. There's cracks and crevices or gases leaking into your home, and we've created an airtight home. And nowadays, that's what new construction is. Then those gases can build up over 4.0, and then we have issues with the radon gases in the home. So what they do now is they set a box or a monitor down. In many cases, there's some home kits you can purchase as well, but I don't think there's reliable, but they set a box down, and every 2 or 3 hours it sniffs the air for 2 days. And after that, it gives you an average of what your radon content in the home is. And if it's over 4.0, then they typically will mitigate for it.
And what is the mitigation for radon?
Well, if we find that that box that we have is allowing gases to escape into it and fill up, then what they do is they seal all the cracks in the floor in the basement area or the lowest livable area in the home.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll drill a hole into the floor of your foundation, and then they'll insert a pipe that's airtight. And somewhere between the floor of your foundation, as that pipe passes through your home, there's a fan that actually vacuums all the gases that may be underneath your home out.
Wow. So, I'm sorry. There was a news item maybe a month ago, maybe not that long ago, but apparently some very powerful insecticide or herbicide, I'm not sure, had been used around this family dwelling. And then the house was power washed or something like that, and all of these chemicals ran into the ground, and people started succumbing to the fumes from this these chemicals. Do you know? Are you familiar with that story, Joe? What I'm talking about?
Mm-mm.
People were passing out and losing consciousness. I think maybe even someone died in this house. It was as if it was the same kind of thing that occurs when there's carbon monoxide leaking into a house, but this was caused from chemicals that have been used around the house. Have you ever encountered anything like that, Richard?
No, I haven't, truthfully. I do know that upon doing inspections, we have a termite inspection that we offer. And over the years, I found that probably one of the best ways to treat for termites is a couple of ways that they do it. They'll drill holes and shove chemical through the holes in the floor around the foundation, and they'll dig trenches and what have you and inject chemical into those trenches. But I found that there's another option that they have. It's called a bait station, where they'll drive little spikes in the ground and put little spikes or blocks with chemical on them. And if, in fact, the termites hit it or bite on it, then they'll treat in that area. Now, when you're dealing with property that may be next to ponds or streams and things of that nature, it's not a good idea to dig trenches and inject chemical into the soil. So that's when the bait stations are typically used. But in the past, they used to do that, and a lot of times you've contaminated the soil. I think that's why now they can't use chloridane. But the chemicals and all that I could think of anyway would probably be something that may have come from maybe some type of pest inspection or pest treatment or something of that nature.
Okay. I wanted to give the number again for any of our listeners who had a question for you, Richard Scroggins, about home inspection. The number to call is 816-931-5534. That's 816-931-KKFI. Joe?
I had a question, sir, Mr. Scroggins. You were talking about the old where people would put their car in the driveway, meaning in the garage, underneath the house, and the gasoline. Now, how did that impact, say, a homeowner has a house like that, and they put their lawnmower or other tool that may use gasoline in the basement? Is that still is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, you definitely don't want to do that. And really, we're not talking the basement as much as we are the garage. And
okay.
Anytime you have, the issue here would be the fact that the water heater is a gas-fired appliance, and it's in the garage.
Okay.
Because you could actually have a furnace in that same garage, and it wouldn't be an issue because its flames come on, and they're up a lot higher off the floor. Anytime you're storing flammable chemicals, you really want to put it in a place where you can ventilate and keep the gases from, you know, ponding or becoming combustible. But the biggest issue is that the water heater itself shouldn't be there because of where the flame is located, and also there's a chance of damage when you drive the car into the garage. Now, another option that I've seen folks, after making that comment or writing that up, have come up with is replace the gas water heater with an electric water heater, and you no longer have that issue.
So there's a fix for that particular situation, is to go from gas to electric.
Yep.
And that would be a new reason to have an inspection, because once those things are sighted, then you may go, oh, well, that means what can we do now? And that's what your inspector would be there for.
All righty. We've got another caller. Caller, are you there?
Yes.
You're on.
How are you doing?
Hi, good. You're on the air at 90.1 FM. Tell us your name and what part of town you're calling from.
This is Cookie. I'm calling from North Kansas City.
Hi, Cookie. Your question or comment for Mr. Richard Scroggins.
Oh, okay. Mrs. Scroggins, I was wondering, like, if you're interested in buying a house and then you get a home inspection and then you get into the home, there's a tree in the front yard of the house or somewhere in the yard, and then while you're living there the first couple of months, everything seems fine, but later on, there's you start getting some backup with the plumbing, and come to find out there's some tree roots that were somehow gotten into the plumbing or blocked the plumbing, where you're getting this problem in your toilet or your bathtub or your kitchen sink. So I'm wondering, like, if whoever did the inspection, is it legal for them to leave that out, that to that disclosure that there was a problem with the plumbing or that you could have a problem, or do inspections just don't cover that?
No, actually, unfortunately, but I have a way around a lot of that, because over the years I've determined that that could be an issue as well. Typically, if you're dealing with a home that's over 35 or 40 years old, the drain system itself, and this is for anyone who has a home now even, okay, if it's a cast iron drain system, you know, the metal pipe, not the plastic pipe, then, you know, it's a known fact that after about 35 or 40 years, it begins to break down. So if, in fact, you're looking at a home and your inspection report even states that the drain system is cast iron, which is something we have to report on, what the condition and what type it is, then it would be a good idea to have it scoped. And there are plumbers out there now who can actually run a camera down through your drain system and see just what the condition is all the way out to the street. That's a very good idea. In many cases, since our inspection is a visual examination and we can't judge underground pipes, nor can we dismantle or look underneath, a lot of times, a lot of my clients will tell you that my report will state, due to the age of it, I would recommend scoping. Or if nothing else, I would stand there as you were, you know, we would perform the inspection and tell you, it wouldn't be a bad idea to do this. This is outside of my scope of the inspection, but I would suggest it just based on the fact that it's an older fixture.
Does that answer your question, Cookie?
Yeah, kind of, but I want to know also, like, what about if you had copper pipes? Would that protect the limbs from damaging?
Your drain system should, if you have a copper drain system, then that's a sign of an older home, but a well-built home. But anytime you're dealing with drain systems, you know, that are older, it's a good idea to, if nothing else, have someone run a camera down to get you the condition of it, because we know it's going to break down, and we know there are going to be issues. And in many cases, upon inspection, what I'm doing is looking at the floor drains and the drains around the basement area to see if there ever were any backups. Also, if I'm inspecting a home and I look and I see there is cast iron and I see a plastic cap hanging out of it where a plumber's already been in there, then that tells me that there have been issues in the past, because the cap should be brass.
So there's flags. Thank you, Cookie. We're going to clear the line. And Joe?
So, Mr. Scroggins,
thank
I know
you.
The city offers a, I have an aunt who's had that problem. The city offers the water service plan where they will go in and, because a lot of the drains in Kansas City are clay tile, and when we have these dry summers, the tree branches get in there, and when your water starts clogging up like that, they have to come out. And I know she usually has about twice a year, usually in the wintertime, right about October, November, she has to have them come out and do that, run a clean to clean the drain, and it comes out full of roots because the water is, the tree roots are looking for water during that hot and dry summer. Would you recommend people purchase that?
I strongly suggest it. The difference in the price is incredible. If in fact that system goes and you have to have it repaired and you don't have a warranty, you're starting at about $5,000.
Richard, we're going to take a break and hold your thought. We'll come back to that point in the conversation after these messages here at 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio Urban Connections, and its series on how to buy a home will continue after these messages. 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, Urban Connections. I'm your host, Tana Wolf. Co-host Joe Jackson is at the table. Our guest on the phone is Richard Scroggins. He is a professional home inspector, a certified professional home inspector. And Joe has facilitated this series we're doing here on Urban Connections on how to buy a home. Today is the third installment talking about the importance of a home inspection. Joe?
So, Mr. Scroggins, can you give your contact information for those that may want to contact you? Because you've already had one caller who's looking for you. You can give them your name, information,
email, website if you have one.
But certainly, in order to get in contact with us, the best way to get us anyway would be to call us at area code 816-420-0130. That would be our office number. That's the best way to probably contact me. We have software that we use, and like I said, I'm not too into the websites and all that good stuff, but I do have a website where, if nothing else, you can get testimonials and a little bit more information about just what we do and how we do it. It's homegage.com/SHGIPPI4U.
And also the organization that you mentioned, Richard, the American Society of Home Inspectors, and we were talking about how to find a real, certified, bona fide, true professional home inspector. A website for that is called the American Society of Home Inspectors. It's www.homeinspector.org. Homeinspector.org. And that is a site that will give you access to people who are educated, tested, verified, certified home inspectors. Because just like anything, any good or service that you are thinking about buying or consuming, you need to know that you're dealing with the real deal and not a fake.
So we're coming to our close on this session. So, Mr. Scroggins, is there anything that you would like for people to know to really be cognizant of, especially about in the area of getting an appraisal?
Well, the appraisal, really, I don't know much about.
Home inspection.
I'm sorry. Well, as far as the home inspection goes, like I said, just you want to start with the basics. Everyone's going to find the home that they really enjoy and that they want and that they want to make sure that they can do what they need to do with. The problem that we have is that a lot of times, since we're not trained to look for certain elements that don't pop up until later on, for instance, the drain system that the lady spoke of earlier, you'd call an inspector out to look for those things for you. But if nothing else, make sure that if your house is at the bottom of the hill, where is that water going? If it's an older home, what's the condition of the roof? The life expectancy of the average shingle is about 15 to 20 years. So if the home is 30 years old and it's never had a new roof, then more than likely it's going to need a roof. Concentrate on the box more than anything. Don't worry about the granite countertops and this, this, and so right away. Look at the foundation. Look at the exterior walls, the roof. If those are good, then we're starting off fine. I use the example a lot of times. It's a great car. It just needs an engine. Let's just make sure that we're looking for those things first of all. And if, in fact, those check out, then we can go in and see about the others. But you got to have a good roof or foundation and exterior walls. And then from there, how does it operate?
Richard, that news item I mentioned before was actually about exposure to this lethal gas called phosphine, and this guy was trying to rid his family of rodents, and he applied this chemical, which is this pesticide, which is restricted to professional and industrial use, and the fumes from this seeped into the family's manufactured home overnight. It was applied under the home to keep rodents away, and those people lost their lives. So that's what I was referring to.
Yeah, I figured it had to be something dealing with some type of pest. A lot of times folks will get those little foggers and throw them in the attic to keep the wasps and the silverfish down. Yeah. But, you know, if you're not doing it right, you could cause some serious issues there as well as far as pulling those chemicals back into the home and So like I said, anytime you're dealing with things like that, you really ought to call a professional. It's going to cost you a little bit, but in the long run, I'd rather have it done right than poison everyone in the home.
Alrighty.
Well, thank you, sir, and we look forward to having you at the February 4th event.
I'll be there for you, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Richard.
We made an announcement last week that we did this home series, and one of the questions we came up with is, what would happen if we could have all of our guests from the home series in one place where the public could come and talk with them? And thanks to City Manager Troy Schulte, Director of Housing John Woods, and Stuart Bowington, this is going to happen, folks. Saturday, February 4th, at the Mohart Center, 3200 Linwood, all the guests that you're hearing on Urban Connections are going to be there on a podium to answer your questions about how to buy a house. But we took this one step further. There's a ballroom connected to Mohart where there's going to be a host of vendors there that can tell you different things, like the city's going to bring their minor home repair personnel to talk about that program. They're going to bring their people there to talk about the LED program. And in some cases, you can get free windows out of the LED program, the paint program. There are going to be about 25 different vendors there. There are going to be mortgage companies there that can help you look at getting a mortgage. There's going to be people from the land bank there to talk about land bank properties, and the land bank is going to have a huge announcement in that time, so we're definitely inviting people to come out. It is on Eventbrite, and it opened up this morning. There is only about 400 seats available in Mohart, so we're definitely asking people to come in. The vendor area will be open from 9 to 10. The program will open at start at 10 and end right about noon. And then the vendor area will open back up for an hour. So we're going to be sending the flyers out, but definitely it will be worth your time to come out and to hear these speakers. But I'll also get this incredible information. The best part about it, there is no cost to attend this event. It is free.
And it's a straight-up how-to-buy-a-home fair.
Straight-up how-to-buy-a-home fair, and things that you will be connected with also in the maintenance of your home. So okay. Things that everybody has to know.
Any email you can give folks, Joe?
If anybody's interested, they can give me an email. And my email is onejack007@yahoo.com. That's onejack007@yahoo.com. But if you go to Eventbrite and you can sign up, and it's a limit of 2 tickets per person, so it's free. Please sign up. The first 400 is what we can take, and then it cuts off after that, so we're going to be publicizing it.
Okay.
Our community minute for this week, the city council was debating this ordinance to look at the decriminalization of marijuana. And what a lot of people don't understand is that while marijuana is still illegal, they're just looking at giving people a $25 fine so you won't have to go through the regular court system with it. But there's a couple
for the city.
You won't go through the court system for the state, but you will go through the city with it.
Okay.
But there's a question of that, you know, if you possess 35 grams or less. But one of the questions is, what is possession versus possession with intent to distribute? Nobody mm-hmm. can really tell that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that we definitely need to look at. We're looking at having the Affordable Care Act repealed. How will this impact an already struggling health safety care net in the city and access to hospitals? If you're a student and you are just trying to find a way to make some quick money to pay for some books, and you were to go out and sell
36 grams of
no, if you go out and sell 35 grams, but you look at, now you have, say you were enterprising, you went and bought your baggies before, so as soon as you get back to the dorms, mm-hmm. you can kind of sell it. So now you get pulled over, you can look at losing your federal financial aid.
Yes.
So you would not be able to get any more Pell grants.
So your issue is this legislature could potentially make people think that they were free to do something that could actually impact them gravely down the road.
Exactly. As far as your ability to get a security clearance,
mm-hmm.
your ability to get a job down the road,
mm-hmm.
and it basically furthered the prison to pipeline.
I think we need to do a show on that one.
So yeah. We're definitely going to be talking about that. So definitely begin to look at what is going on at your city council. because these things really can affect you.
They can indeed. We're going to have to address that one because it's going to be very impactful to a lot of people. Please stay tuned, everybody, at the top of the hour for Guess Who's Coming to Kansas City with MC Richardson.